All right, well, let me jump on into the Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll remind you guys that attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee up in Huntsville. Stan McDonald, he's a 30-year veteran of the practice of law, and he is the daily sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue, so I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald here in a few minutes. All right, so this past weekend, the annual CPAC conference, it concluded in D.C. with epic gatherings of conservatives and all-star ensembles of conservative policy warriors giving speeches. I mean, y'all, folks like Charlie Kirk, Dan Bongino, Ben Shapiro, Tom Homan, Vivek Ramaswamy, Vice President J.D. Vance, and so many more. All of it culminating with a speech by President Trump. I've already decided, by the way, that Right Side is going to be there next year. We will. And it was a celebration event at CPAC. It was. It was a victory lap of sorts. In the wake of the November elections, the conservative right in America is just enjoying the fruits of their labors and the spoils of their victory. We are watching as government is right-sized and military is strengthened and waste, fraud, and abuse are revealed. Prisoners are freed. Common sense restored. Was CPAC a pep rally? You bet it was. And the truth is, it looked like they were all having fun. I mean, for crying out loud, Elon Musk is on stage running around swinging a custom-made chainsaw given to him by Argentinian President Javier Milei. Afuera! Oh, WWF SmackDown event has less going on than CPAC did. But did you also know that just down the road, at nearly the same time, was the counter-pep rally? Have you heard that? The counter-pep rally. A gathering of sore losers and ne'er-do-wells and sycophants of the lamestream media who needed to have one last gasp. The grim reapers of politics, mostly leftover never-Trumpers and white guys for Harris. They called it the Principal's First Summit. They really did. They met. They called it the Principal's First Summit. They also called it the Anti-CPAC Conference. Great sulking minds like Bill Kristol and George Conway and Adam Kinzinger and Mark Cuban and Chris Christie and John Bolton. Wow. They even brought in two of the former Capitol Police officers who made their claim to fame by being there on January 6th. Man, that's not a conference. That's just one big cry room. That's all that is, one big cry room filled with pasty losers who are triggered by Trump's very existence. I predict the mood was not quite the match for the jubilation down the street at CPAC. The bottom line, though, is they just don't get it. You see, if Americans wanted their version of elitist moderation and establishment government, we would have voted for Nikki Haley. But we didn't. And it's not sitting well with entrenched believers of the Uniparty. The bottom line is, they just don't get it. They don't get that the will of the people has spoken. And if they want that change, then they will have their chance a few years from now to challenge the current leadership to bring in their own, and we'll see where the chips fall. But for now, they pout. They pout. A full conference of griping and stories about what could have been. A gathering of regrets. A plotting and scheming of how to take it all back. But look, here's the thing though, y'all. Democracy is a sacred thing. And being an elected official is more than just special. It is more than just a popularity contest. It is a sacred duty with solemn value placed on it, something that much of the world can't say they know or understand. And the enigma here that those who just don't get it don't get is that we know that on the conservative right. We do value it. They even named their conference, what, Principles Matter? I mean, for crying out loud, like you don't think we know that? Look, when I was elected to the state Senate, I knew that it was something special. I took it serious, but then came the day, soon after I won the election, that I made my first trip to the Alabama State House. I rode the elevator to the 7th floor, I went out on the floor of the state Senate, and I found a desk with my nameplate already on it, and it hit me that I was in a place to do business that affected millions of lives, and I was humbled by it, even a little bit overcome by it for a bit. I was struck by the formality of the proceedings, using parliamentary procedure and following the rules of the Senate. Certain things had to be said at certain times and under certain conditions in order to promote the good order of the body and ensure the records of the Senate were kept intact. And I was proud to be a part of it. One day, several years into my time, by the way, in Montgomery, I was walking back from lunch with my friend and colleague, Senator Greg Reed, who until recently was the Senate pro tem. And as Greg and I crossed the parking lot, I looked over and I saw the state capitol with its white dome shining in the sun. And I had this sense of being a part of something bigger than me. And I told Greg, I hope I never get used to this, because the day I get used to it, it's time to go. But then came several months between my second election and the start of the next session when the Senate chamber was renovated. See, the Senate chamber had been tired and battered. All the desks were made out of chipped formica-covered plywood that had been in place for decades. It was awful. The carpet was covered in stains. There was mold growing in the corners of the room left over from the days when they used to smoke on the Senate floor. Senator Del Marsh, as the pro tem, he took it upon himself to orchestrate the renovation of the Senate chamber while we were there. He used prison labor, carpenters, to make all the desks. He replaced all the worn-out chairs. He cleaned out the mold. He painted the walls. And he laid a classic blue patterned carpet. And just before I went to see it for the first time, I asked him if he was satisfied with it. He looked at me and he said, "Phil, now it looks like a place where the laws ought to be made." What I'm trying to convey by sharing these memories is that the business of doing the people's business is a sacred trust. It is not to be taken lightly. It is something that should not be done with a laissez-faire attitude. Every vote cast in a state house or the U.S. Capitol is a vote that affects millions of people. On the floor of the U.S. Senate is where cabinet officials, Supreme Court justices, and our nation's highest-ranking military officers all receive their confirmations. The respective chambers of the U.S. House and Senate, those are where decisions are made to raise taxes, declare war, address disasters, and sometimes pass budgets. You know that no more than 100 men and women serve at any one time in the U.S. Senate itself? Just 100 out of hundreds of millions. The Oval Office is the people's office. I mean, we decide who sits at the resolute desk and gets to make the decisions that impact the world. The president appoints members to the U.S. Supreme Court, who then determine the applicability of the laws and the constitutional grounding thereof. Members of our elected government, for all their warts and blemishes, they're still people that we look to for decisions designed to establish justice and ensure domestic tranquility and provide for the common defense and promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty. And even when they don't, even when they make decisions we don't like, they should be constrained to do so in a manner that is professional and orderly and formal, because the making of laws is actually special. It's one of the most special things in the world. There are nations full of people who have no idea what it means to have an elected person standing in office swearing an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution. The making of laws and the enforcement of laws are both special, and the interpretation and protection of laws is also special. And we deserve to know that those who make them, good or bad, don't do so as an afterthought or a lark, and that those we vote for are the ones who get to do it because they actually get it. And look, I'll add one more thought to this. The elected will of the people, it can only happen if God allows it. And I say that to say this: I believe that we were just witness to a massive answer to prayer. I believe that we were just spared from the debauchery and abuse of the process of government unlike any that has been seen in modern times, and certainly not in America. And I am not at all, by the way, equating Trump or his administration or any elected officials with godliness, not at all. I'm not placing them on some undeserved pedestal. But I do believe that Donald Trump and his team, I do believe that they are in office, and Republicans are also in the majority, because of a massive intervention by an all-knowing God, because people prayed. And I believe that, and no one can shake me from it. Not even a bunch of hand-wringing never-Trumpers in their giant cry room. And look, I'll close with the words that are found to the right of the statue of Thomas Jefferson in the Jefferson Memorial. It's a quote that's attributed to Jefferson himself. It says, "God who gave us life gave us liberty. And can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are of the gift of God?" Well, I say no. But I acknowledge that the anti-Trump, anti-conservative establishment types who lost bigly in the elections, they have a First Amendment right to scream in the public square if they want to. They do. But I have an equal right not to listen to their drivel. Because in my opinion, they just don't get it. The reality is, we do. And that's a wrap for The Right Side Way.